We're going to talk about light maintenance around our home. And a number of blind people can and do perform these maintenance tasks as they are needed. You can save a little money if you do it yourself. And the really keen thing is you don't have to wait for someone to come and do it. For example, if you have a leaky faucet and you can repair it yourself, you don't have to wait a week for the plumber to come out and get it into their schedule. We have a accomplished home handy person. He does a lot of maintenance around his home, so he's going to share a lot of wonderful tips with us, and I'm looking forward to it myself. So please welcome Mark Rome.
Thank you for that nice introduction, and it's good to be with all of you this afternoon. Talk about a few things that you will find helpful around your house. But I want to start off with just a couple general comments that I guess two ways of looking at this. If you were someone who was not inclined to do work around your house and fixing things like that when you still had your sight, chances are you're probably not going to do it now. But if you are somebody that did like doing that stuff, there's absolutely no reason you can't continue to do it now just because you have lost your sight. And just as importantly, if you didn't do these things before, but you have an interest in doing them, there's no reason you can't learn to do them now, even though you don't have your sight. So those are just kind of some of the ground rules I wanted to set going into this, that, you know, this can be for anyone who has an interest in doing these types of things around their house. Something as simple as a leaky faucet. This happened in our house just a few weeks ago. It was the day after Thanksgiving. And my wife tells me first thing in the morning that she was in the bathroom and she heard this sound. She went over to the faucet and it was dripping. So I decided, well, I guess today I'm going to be fixing a leaky faucet. So very quickly, I went out to the hardware store, picked up the cartridge that I needed to work on the faucet, came home and thought I would quickly get the faucet repaired. Well, as I got out my tools to start doing this, it required an Allen wrench to take the handle off of the faucet. So I got my Allen wrenches out and could not get the Allen wrench to unscrew the little set screw. And I went back and forth with this for some time. And after a little bit of frustration, walked away from it thinking, okay, you just got to walk away and then come back. Come back, still couldn't get the Allen wrench to work. So then I started thinking, well, maybe I have standard Allen wrenches and it requires metric Allen wrenches. So I called a friend of mine and said, do you by chance have standard or metric Allen wrenches? He goes, oh, yeah, I've got both. So I said, well, do you mind if I borrow them? So, you know, he said, of course not. So I went over to his house, took my Allen wrenches with him. He goes, well, your Allen wrenches are metric. Like, I had no idea they were metric. So I borrowed his standard Allen wrenches, came home. The Allen wrench went right in the set screw, took the handle off, and 5 minutes later, the faucet was fixed. So that's just to say that having the right tools to do the job makes life much, much easier. And, you know, many tools, you know, you can get into a lot of price with some tools. If you're a woodworker, you know what I'm talking about, but they don't have to be pricey. Like a set of Allen wrenches was, you know, under $10. So you can come up with a little home repair toolkit that I think every house should have a basic toolkit in it that doesn't cost a whole lot of money to have, but does give you the opportunity to work on things when you do need to. You know, a lot of people say, well, I just don't know what I'm doing. You know, I'm kind of leery to get into fixing the leaky faucet because I'm worried that if I start working on the leaky faucet, instead of a dripping faucet, I'm going to have a running faucet. So I'd rather not get into it not knowing what I'm doing. And I would offer some encouragement there that, you know, there's very little that you can really cause too much damage with that can't be fixed later. But there's always the shutoff valve underneath the sink that you can turn the water off if anything did, you know, was to happen. If you live in a town or community where there is an old-fashioned hardware store, I know that's becoming harder and harder to find with the big box stores, Lowe's, Home Depot, and those types of things. But I found it very, very helpful to have a local hardware store where you find a lot of people that work there that aren't just clerks in the store, but they're people that use the things that they're selling all the time and have great advice on how to use them and what product you actually need to fix the problem. So, you know, I would encourage people to reach out, you know, to that hardware store. Just go in and introduce yourself to them. Tell them you got this project you're working on and ask if they have any advice that may be helpful to you. You know, when you go into a Home Depot or a Lowe's, obviously they've got thousands of products there and more than likely they have what you're looking for, but it can be frustrating to find the specific piece that you're looking for. And what I have experienced is it's difficult to find someone in the store that understands when you're trying to explain to them exactly what you're trying to do. Here's the product you need and here's exactly how to use it. Little home maintenance things, as Glenn mentioned in the introduction, introduction can save you some money. That's always important, or it's nice to save some money when you can. Just as importantly, it saves you the time. If you can sit down and do it yourself, you know, you don't have to wait. Trying to get in somebody's schedule can take days, if not weeks, to get somebody to come out to your house to do something. So the more that you can do for yourself, more than likely, the better off you are.
Small set of screwdrivers that you can get at any hardware store inexpensively, pliers, a couple of wrenches. Bear in mind that when you're working just around your home, most homes have sizes of pipes, screws, and all those things are pretty common. For example, almost all of your hinges on your doors use the same size screws that probably are in my hinges at my house on the doors. That isn't 100% true, but I'm just saying it's pretty easy to get a few tools that you can, that's very useful around your home, and you can do it with a small amount of money. And of course, once you invest in it, if you keep up with your tools and don't lend them out, you're set. You know, you don't have to buy tools every time you have a project.
Places like Lowe's and Home Depot, you can go in there and they do have a basic home toolkit, which would have common sizes of wrenches, you know, maybe one set of pliers rather than a whole set of pliers. Rather than you having to go and build your whole toolkit, you know, piece by piece, sometimes you can go in and get the basic starter kit. My wife and I got married. She came, she had a basic home toolkit. So it's something that we still use to this day. It's in the closet. So when something happens, we know exactly where to go get it. And in most cases, it fits the things that we need to look, you know, take care of.
This is Michael. I was going to ask you, if you have a particular brands of good toolkits, you know, where they're made well and don't break the bank. And like you said, all the variety of screwdrivers and wrenches and things.
I have always been very partial to Craftsman hand tools. Unfortunately, Sears is no longer in existence, but you can pick up some Craftsman tools at Lowe's now. They're carrying a lot of those products. And that's one thing. Craftsman tools could be a little bit on the pricier side than generic tools, but they were quality and they came with a lifetime warranty. So if anything ever happened to it, if you were using a tool, for example, using a screwdriver as a chisel, well, you're not supposed to do that anyway, but if you broke it, they would replace it for you. Like many things, there are a range of prices that you can spend on tools. And if you're not somebody that's going to get into doing, you know, heavy maintenance repairs, those types of things, you probably want to just look for the basic toolkit and, you know, spend a minimal amount of money just to get the tools that you need.
Bernie, and then Dr. Peters.
I'm a big fan of duct tape. You know, I use duct tape for everything.
And every toolkit should have duct tape.
So I have a new house. It's going to be 2 years old in April, and the warranty is going to be up. I have a tankless water heater. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but I'm supposed to be getting it serviced by a plumber. Why am I supposed to be getting it serviced? What for?
They come both electric and gas powered models. So I'm not sure which one you have.
Gas.
You know, and it's one of those things that is probably more of a preventive thing that, you know, they want to come in and look at it. Sometimes the warranty of a product like that comes that you have to have had preventive maintenance done on it through the years. Just like the furnace in your house, it's good to have somebody come and check it out periodically. You don't want to start going into the winter season, go to turn your furnace on and it doesn't work. So you hear a lot of commercials on the radio, annual checkup on your systems around your house. And I think that's what you're talking about with the tankless water heater. It's another appliance, just like any other appliance, although they're considerably smaller than a regular water heater. It's another appliance. So I think appliance companies are now marketing. They offer a maintenance program to cover any expenses.
I do have to get it serviced by someone who's, you know, licensed or whatever. Otherwise, the warranty will be null and void. That's your understanding, correct?
Well, that's what they would like to tell you. So, you know, the manufacturer probably can't really tell you that, but I'm sure the people selling you the maintenance contract would love to tell you that they're right. The ones that have to service this or you're null and void. But
right. Well, I didn't really have a choice, but what is the benefit of a tankless water heater?
Well, it's only producing hot water when needed. It's an on-demand water heater, especially useful if you're someone who is not home all the time using hot water. If you, you know, just get up and take a shower, say in the morning, and you're gone 24 hours a day and you don't take another shower till the next morning, you're not using a whole lot of hot water. But if you have a traditional water heater in your house, then it's keeping that water at temperature the entire day. The tankless water heater is heating it on demand. So the good thing with a tankless water heater, if it's sized properly for your house, you will never run out of hot water, but you will not be, you know, wasting the energy to heat the water that you don't need to be heating anyway, because you're not going to be using it.
So we basically live in a townhouse end unit, and it's on a slab. We don't have a basement. 3/4 of the upstairs is a finished suite. And then the other quarter is an attic. And the water heater and all the mechanics of the house are in that attic. And in that attic, they did not put insulation. And it gets extremely hot in the summertime. How difficult of a project would that be for my wife and I to insulate the attic?
Actually, not too difficult a project. You know, the key is, do you want to be the person that does that? Because there are a lot of projects that you could certainly do if you want to do them. If you absolutely don't want to do it, you're just going to make yourself and your wife a little bit miserable trying to get into a project that you didn't want to do to start with. That's a big key in a lot of these things that, you know, do I really want to fix the leaky faucet, or that's something you really don't want to get into? Well, then you're probably better off not getting into it and hiring somebody to come out and take care of it for you. But yeah, I agree with you with the attic. It's probably a good idea. It's technically in a house. It's unconditioned space, does not need to be insulated. It's never a bad thing to have it insulated. It's just something that a builder typically is not going to do it because he's going to incur a cost that's not required. A lot of things that you do around your house, you do by feel anyway. And I'll go back to working underneath the kitchen sink again. A lot of times you can't see what you're doing anyway. You're reaching in there and feeling where the nut is and, you know, going in with a wrench to loosen that nut and take it off or whatever. You really can't see what you're doing. And unfortunately, a lot of us, when we lose our sight, tend to think, well, I can't do this because I can't see it. Well, you know, that's just a myth that we've allowed ourselves to buy into, that you weren't going to see it anyway. So it's no different now that you can't see, because you weren't going to be able to get your head in there to see it anyhow. So just something to keep in mind. Just, you know, don't make more out of these projects than they really are.
This is Michael, and I do insulation, but I let my brother actually do the insulation, but I stay downstairs and loaded the ground up newspaper stuff into the machine. So that's, you know, you can help someone do it. Also, we have Dr. Peters up next.
Okay, so you were blowing in some insulation. So yeah, that's a different task than putting up bad insulation.
Talk about small projects like kitchen projects, but I was thinking, I have a pot that I truly love. An old pot. And I keep a Phillips screwdriver because it has little handles on it.
Right.
And every once in a while, I have to tighten them up a little bit. And I just, you know, kind of use that to tighten them up. The little hooks to hang things up that have the adhesive on the back.
Yep.
That's something I would be interested in doing.
Yep, that's very easy. You find a lot of those products there, peel and stick products that you just peel the back off and stick it on the wall. You see a lot of those people sometimes put them in their shower to hang things on or to hang a washcloth on or something in the shower. So something very easy to do, but you're right. It's much easier to install something like that than it is to drill a hole and put a screw in, that type of thing. So there are ways to simplify these projects. You know, another thing I'll mention to you as well, there are YouTube videos for everything today. So if you're inclined to do a Google search for a YouTube video, you can ask it to look up practically any project that you might be considering. And I guarantee you, you'll find a multitude of YouTube videos on that subject. The only downside that I will caution you is a lot of the videos that are there, of course, they have video on the screen as well as the person describing what they're doing. And they'll say, well, you take this here and you put it in this over here, and then you grab that and do this with it. And so some cases it's not overly helpful because they're relying on you seeing what they're actually doing as they're filming it. So, you know, it could be something that you may want to have someone with you to help watch the video to describe exactly what they're doing. But once again, if you are inclined to tackle a project that you really don't have a strong idea of how to do it, search the internet for it and see what you might be able to find as far as instructions there. I found that very helpful, especially if you're doing maintenance or repair on home appliances. You know, they don't have just YouTube videos for, you know, repairing a refrigerator. They'll have a multitude of videos on the specific model that you're talking about. So if you're looking for a GE model number, whatever, I guarantee you'll find YouTube videos on how to fix the water dispenser. You'll never overlook that as a resource.
YouTube videos, you're right. Some don't describe. They do this here and put this here, but some are very descriptive and some we can actually follow.
Exactly. And I was actually shocked when I looked up. I mean, I was picking something fairly obscure. I had to fix cordless phones at our house. We got to where the keypad on the cordless phone, some of the buttons wouldn't work. And you know, I'm thinking I've got to get rid of these phones and get new phones. And I just decided to do a Google search on that phone, the keypad on the phone. And lo and behold, there were YouTube videos on how to repair the keypad on that specific model Panasonic cordless phone. So it was extremely helpful. And rather than having to go out and get all new phones, I bought these little repair kits were, I think, maybe $4 a piece, and was able to repair all the cordless phones in our house to where the keypads work again. So something as simple as that.
Janie Degenschein?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I just wanted to share with you, I'm the technology lady, and I agree with you at YouTube. And also, if you lose a manual, you can get your manuals on YouTube. You can get, you know, anything, just Google it and you'll be able to find whatever you need. Just as long as you have as much information as you can to supply it, you can find it.
Not only can you find the manual, but instead of you having the paper manual at home that you may not be able to read any longer, by looking it up online, it will actually read it to you. So it can be extremely helpful.
Dr. Judith Reid.
I'm thinking in terms of changing my locks, my entry door locks. And I did it before when I could see. What kind of locks now would you recommend?
Well, first off, I want to congratulate you and encourage you to tackle that product, especially since you said you've done it before. So obviously
I used to do them all the time.
Right.
And so what I like to do is I like to get a key, the same lock for the front and the back door. So I only have to carry one set of keys.
Absolutely. I totally understand that.
And I usually go to Home Depot, and Home Depot will set the code so that they're the same.
If you find the right store with the right employee, they can be very, very helpful. But I was actually just in Lowe's not long ago. I just built a shed in my backyard and was looking for a doorknob and a deadbolt for the door on the shed.
Yes.
I went to Lowe's and they came in a set where you get the doorknob and the deadbolt came already prepackaged and keyed alike. They were keyed alike. They came as a match set, but I will tell you, be prepared. There is a multitude of choices in doorknobs now. I was shocked how many they offered. Different styles, different finishes. It's still simple, but there's so many finishes. Well, you know, as everything is today, you go to the grocery store now and you want something, you know, simple as mayonnaise, and they've got, well, what kind do you want? We've got 10 kinds of mayonnaise, not brands, but kinds. Well, it's the same thing when you go to the hardware store. You know, what kind do you want? Do you want polished brass? Do you want nickel? Do you want chrome? You know, and then what style do you want? Do you want the round knob? Do you want one that's a little more has lever handles on it, that type of thing. But yes, they're definitely there, and you can find them already pre-keyed for you. Don't underestimate your abilities. Just because you can't see things anymore doesn't mean you can't do them. And I suspect when you get back into it, it's going to come right back to you. Nothing has really changed as far as that's concerned. Replacing a doorknob is something as simple as usually taking out a couple of screws, sliding a handle off from each side and putting the new one back in. So, you know.
Oh, okay. Yes, I do remember that. What about the deadbolt?
Same situation. It's got two screws that hold it together as well.
Okay.
Got you. That works very simple. And obviously, you know, there's deadbolts come in single cylinder and double cylinder, meaning a double cylinder you have to use a key on both sides, and a single cylinder has a knob on one side and a key on the other side. You know, that's one thing, unfortunately, we all do when we lose our sight is we start questioning, am I going to be able to do this?
We stop doing what we did before.
I think you're going to find when you get back into this project, since you said you've done it before, you're going to get back into it and you realize, you know, that was no more difficult than it was before. But we want to overanalyze everything now because we can't see it.
Right.
So I just encourage you to get into the project. And, you know, the first time you do it, it may take you a little longer than you might have anticipated, but just be patient with yourself. And, you know, by the end of the day, you'll have the project done. You'll be happy that you did it. And it'll give you the confidence to move on and tackle the next project.
Well, the next project is tuck pointing. Do you know any? I find that it's difficult to find people that know how to do that. I did tuck point before.
Well, I'll tell you, that's a project you don't hear too many people talking about anymore. But you're referring to the mortar on a brickwork?
Yep, that's the one.
Well, obviously, if you've done it before, you can certainly do it again. It's one of those things you just feel your way. You have to get in there and chisel out the mortar, but then you can feel what you've done, and then just go back in and with your trowel, tuck in the mortar and move on.
Yeah, but you got to have the right mortar because my bricks are ages old, and I understand you need a special mortar for the older bricks.
I would encourage you at that point to contact a local brickyard. Most places have a brickyard or someplace that's not too far away from you, and talk to them about what you're trying to do, because you're absolutely right. If you're in a house that's, say, 100 years old or so, it's different mortar than they use today. Something you can easily still get, because there are so many houses that are starting to get to that vintage that still need repair work done on them. So obviously somebody's going to make something to do that repair.
Well, most of the houses are not even made of brick anymore.
Do a Google search on tuck pointing brickwork in old houses, and I'll guarantee you'll find a multitude of videos that will talk to you about it. Excellent questions, but yeah, I'm excited that you're going to tackle these projects.
I used to really do everything. I put roofs on, and I've gone up and fixed the chimney on the roof, and I used to do everything.
Well, once again, I would encourage you, there's no reason you can't continue to do it just because you can't see the way you used to.
That's what the NFP means when they say live the life you want, because if you've done it before, you can continue to do it. I have a friend who's totally blind, and he did have some low vision as a child, and he builds homes. I mean, he has someone do the electrical and driveways and stuff, but I mean, he basically builds those homes, and he's very successful and rents them for a while and sells off the older ones. And so you really can do whatever you want.
Absolutely. Even if you've not done it before, you know, if you're so inclined to do these types of things, I encourage people to try them. It's very rewarding to tackle a project like that. Once you get it fixed, it's rewarding to know that you did it yourself.
Okay. It looks like Gloria and Bernie raised their hands again. So Gloria?
I needed more smoke detectors and CO detectors in my home that I had recently into. And so I purchased combination smoke and CO detectors. A problem with placing them. If you place it up high where you would put a smoke detector, then the CO is not necessarily going to be detected. But if you place it lower where the CO might be detected, you could have a lot of smoke with that. So, I mean, should I just call it a mistake and get separate units, or is there someplace I can put these where they might actually be effective?
Well, there is. Obviously, they manufacture them as a combination unit because people do want to use them that way. But you are right that carbon monoxide is heavier than air, so it's going to stay closer to the ground, and smoke is going to tend to rise to the top. So you tend to see smoke detectors either up high on the wall or mounted on the ceiling. What you'll find now is if you, once again, Lowe's and Home Depot sells a lot of these products that now they're simple, that they come with a lithium battery in them. So if you remember the old days with your smoke alarm, the battery would go bad and it'd start chirping and you'd have to replace the battery and whatever.
These are the 10-year batteries.
They now come with the 10-year batteries in them. So it's right. Something that you don't have to worry about. Once you get it installed, it's there and you don't have to worry about it again for a pretty good while, except in the case that you had to deal with one that malfunctioned. One thing you could always do with that, even though it's both a smoke and a carbon monoxide detector, rather than throwing it away when it still functions, if you're not comfortable with it performing both as smoke and carbon monoxide detection, just place it either high or low and count on it as being just one or the other, even though it's still rated that it's going to do both. So you could put it, you know, in your utility area where your furnace is and say it's now a carbon monoxide detector, even though it tells you it's both. I hope that's what's helpful with this call today, because you just hit the nail right on the head. That's the problem that many people have, is they just are hesitant or reluctant to get into doing things because they're just not sure how they're going to do it. And unfortunately, we as individuals who have lost our sight tend to question things when we really don't need to. Most things are no more complicated than any other thing, but we make a mountain out of a molehill in many cases. And you don't need to do that. You just need to jump in and do it.
Okay, Bernie?
Ceiling, grout, and marble countertops. I have a very large master bathroom with a tile throughout and marble countertops, and a kitchen with marble countertops and tile backsplashes. Of course, they don't tell you that all this needs to be sealed when you go ahead and, you know, upgrade and buy this stuff. And only after I closed on the house and was I told by my neighbors, hey, Bernie, you need to seal that stuff. So what do you know about that, if anything?
Well, that's typically is the case, especially if you're dealing with a countertop. For example, if it has grout lines in it from tile, that if you were to spill something like grape juice on the counter, it's a good chance it will absorb into the grout and stain it somewhat. So sealing it is always a good option. And they do make products to seal that type of thing that you can find at Home Depot and Lowe's. Another thing I would encourage you is to contact a ceramic tile or marble, you know, manufacturer and installer, because they may have, you know, more of a specialized product than what you might find at a Lowe's or Home Depot and give you more instructions on how to do that. But most of them are very simple installation. I know, talked with someone recently that just had their bathroom redone and has a completely ceramic tile shower stall now. And they wanted to seal it before they did. And it was basically as simple as it was a liquid type product that you put on and let it dry. And then you came back and buffed it off. And then they, you know, put another application on. But something relatively simple to do. But
all those little grout lines, that's a lot of work, man.
Well, it is. But part of the allure of having a good looking tile bathroom is it comes with some maintenance and some upkeep to keep it looking that way. Things that you don't have to do often. I mean, You do it one time and it's pretty well sealed. You might have to do it again a few years later, but it's not something that you have to do, you know, monthly or yearly. So yeah, it is a project, but there's no reason you can't do it. And once again, you know, I guarantee if you look under YouTube videos, you'll find somebody talking about sealing grout lines. We're talking about all kinds of little homeowner projects that, you know, we may not think about, but it's always good to talk to someone else because they've got something that's in the back of their mind that they've wanted to do for a while and they just haven't gotten around to do it, or they just don't think they can do it. So it's good to hear you all bringing up these projects that you all are looking at.
I've got like a room, a bedroom that's adjacent or directly across from the where the furnace is in the utility area. And of course, it gets a lot of noise from the furnace. Can I seal that off safely or put something that would still allow air through but eliminate the noise of the actual fans of the furnace?
Noise is always a tricky thing in a house because the walls are you know, picking up that vibration. And sometimes people insulate those walls, even though they do not need to be insulated for temperature reasons. Sometimes people will put insulation in there just for sound reasons. So it is something that can be done. A lot of times your inside of your utility room is not finished. So that makes it a lot easier if it's not finished to go in and add some insulation to it. If it is finished, then obviously, you know, you would to do that, you would have to tear the drywall off the wall and do that, which certainly can be done, but it's a little more involved, a little more costly and certainly messy, but certainly can be done. But I'm right there with you. You get a lot of noise from a furnace. Sometimes on forced air systems, the ductwork in some cases can be undersized. So it's pulling a lot of air through a small grill, and that can cause a lot more sound than if it was a larger grill there. But that's something that's more of an installation when the manufacturer or your HVAC contractor installs the ductwork. Not something that's really a homeowner maintenance or repair type of thing, although it certainly could be done. At some point in time, that furnace is going to go out on you. They don't last forever. So that's something just to keep in the back of your mind. When that day comes that you're going to have to make a change, then you talk to your installer when they put a new system in for you about your concerns that you've had in the past and what can they do to alleviate them.
Definitely. June, you have a question.
What I have now, like in my backyard, like squirrels and them raccoons.
Right.
And them opossums. They said, you know, you have to sprinkle the cayenne pepper and everything out there or use peppermint. So all of this was done, but then it rains. So I'm out here doing it again. And then they have this thing from Home Depot and all Lowe's. You know, you hook it up to your, you know, your garden hose.
Okay.
And you can just spray your yard. And
right.
Then once you spray it, then you see like a whole bunch of, you know, bugs, you know, like just monopolize the whole, you know, the atmosphere. They just, I don't know if I hit a nest. How do I get rid of this?
And squirrels especially can be extremely persistent that you'll find all kinds of products out there today that claim they're squirrel proof. But I've not found anything yet that's 100% that a squirrel, for whatever reason, will work at it and work at it and work at it until they beat the system. So, you know, if you can ever come up with some product that's squirrel proof, you found your way to make your fortune, because I don't truly believe that there is anything that is truly squirrel proof out there. But of course, you can do some things that, you know, make life a little more difficult for them. And there are, it sounded like some of the things you were mentioning were like home remedies of putting out cayenne pepper or whatever. So that's something, you know, it's not a chemical that you're putting out. You can just go get some spices from a local store and spread them in the yard. But once again, you're right. As soon as you rain, it's going to dilute the product and it's not going to work the way it was intended to use when it was fresh. And being in the city, don't think that the squirrels and possums and raccoons aren't there. They're there all the time. We live in the city too. We live in an older house. Our house is actually 100 years old this year. And we live in a neighborhood where the houses are very close together. They're not connected, but they're about 3 feet between the houses. So you can walk down a little alleyway between the house. And we just had some work done in our backyard. We put in a patio. And while we were doing the work, of course, the ground, you know, at times was muddy. And you could see little footprints in the mud where the critters had come at the night and, you know, played in the water or whatever. So they're raccoons that are checking out your trash can. And, you know, so they're definitely there, whether you think you're in the city. What are all these creatures doing here? Well, they're there. You just may not see them like you do when you're out in the country, just having a good quality trash can to start with. So the thing is, find something that has a good lid on it and make sure you seal it tight, because the more difficult it is for them to get in, they're going to go somewhere else where it's easier. Watching the squirrels, it can be entertaining. When you've got, let's say, a bird feeder in your yard, it can be extremely entertaining watching them try and get in that thing. It's amazing the gymnastics that they can do to get to that feeder. I've actually seen a squirrel climb up a tree, go way out on a branch to where that thing's almost ready to you know, bend over and fall and jump from there to the bird feeder. Hit the bird feeder and didn't land on the bird feeder. You know, he hit it and then fell off on the ground. He went and did it again and again and again until he finally jumped on that bird feeder and landed on it, stayed on it. They're more persistent than you are. If you're going to get into the battle with trying to, a battle of wills with them, I'm afraid you're going to lose.
What about traps? Because, yeah, we had that issue with the raccoons and some open spaces in our, so we had to do some repair on the roof so they couldn't even get in, but just to keep them from damaging a roof. Or someone told me about something actually called a pipe trap where they actually can get trapped that way. Is there, what's effective traps?
Actually, I have a friend just recently lives just a few blocks away from me, set a pipe trap in his yard because he was having trouble with squirrels at his house. And a pipe trap is basically a trap that's inside a piece of pipe that only a certain size creature can get into it. Because that's the one thing you want to be careful if you're in a neighborhood, especially that you don't want to set just a typical trap out there and have, you know, somebody's dog or cat get caught in it. So that's where a pipe trap comes in handy. It's specifically small enough that only a squirrel could get into it, but they are effective.
Okay, Shelley?
In South Carolina, we hear advertisements on TV all the time for Critter Ritter. It comes out and helps get rid of small critters. Critter Ritter.
And they've got little tricks of the trade that they've learned over the years too, but and they'll tell you they're not 100%. You can only do but so much, but it is nice knowing some of the tricks to the trade.
Okay, so I live in this new neighborhood, okay, and we all have cement driveways, and these guys are sealing their cement driveway, and I think that's crazy. What do you think?
Personal preference. The only thing that will happen if you've got a concrete driveway, if you park a vehicle on it, more than likely the vehicle is going to leak some type of fluid, whether it's, you know, oil or antifreeze out of the radiator system. Transmission fluid, something like that's going to get on the driveway. So some people want to seal it just to make the driveway continue to look pretty. So if oil or something gets on it, you can just hose it off. I will tell you, this is a little trick that can be done. If you do have stained concrete, you can take something like a kitty litter, put down on that and scrub it with a brick, and it will actually remove that stain out of the concrete.
I got some grease on the patio from the grill. What work with that, even though it's been on there for like a year now?
Well, they make a product that you can get at a auto parts store called Oil Dry, and it comes in any number of name brands, but kitty litter will work pretty much the same way. Just go to the grocery store and get a bag of kitty litter, and it's very absorbent, of course, but if you put, you know, sprinkle it down over top of the stain and then get a hard surface like a brick or something like that and scrub the surface with the, you know, kitty litter between the brick and the concrete, a lot of times it will remove that stain from the surface. Once again, if you want to seal the driveway, you're not going to hurt anything by doing it. It's an expense to do it, and it's just a personal preference. Do you want to spend that money to do it, or you want to just take your chances the way it is? Well, and the stains really aren't hurting your concrete driveway. They're just not sightly. So, you know, that's why some people want to do it, just because they don't want to deal with the ugly, you know, drops of oil that are going to end up, inevitably, they're going to end up on the driveway.
Yeah, I know. Well, when I had an asphalt driveway, that was a pain doing that every year. And I thought, oh, I'm overdoing that.
Now, if you have an asphalt driveway, it's much more important that you do seal it, because I don't know if you've noticed, but if you ever go to a gas station, they may have asphalt in their parking area, but when you get near the gas pump, it's always concrete.
Yeah.
Because petroleum products will eat asphalt. If you have a car sitting on an asphalt driveway and it's dripping oil or gasoline onto that asphalt, it's going to damage the driveway. So with an asphalt driveway, it's extremely important to get that sealed or protected, but not so much with the concrete. That's more of a cosmetic.
I would add to the varmint discussion that any repellent that you use for varmints, insects, whatever it is, it is temporary. You're going to have to redo it over and over and over. It does help. I mean, none of those things are permanent, so it's not a one-time fix.
I had a slab house. I had a bad problem with ants. So how are you about doing your own extermination and applying your own chemicals?
Certain chemicals you actually have to be licensed to buy, and they're probably the more effective chemicals. Certainly, you can pick up things at a hardware store or like a Home Depot or Lowe's that are products for that purpose. Typically, they are a quote-unquote homeowner version of that product, so it's a lot less effective. It's been diluted somewhat to make it safer for the general public. If you're really having a big problem with ants, probably the best bet, if it's a continual problem, a lot of times if you've got ants, it's because there's a food source somewhere. So you need to really look and find out what that might be. You may be, you know, have crumbs that they're coming to get, any kind of a sugar product that they're coming after, that type of thing. Then a lot of that's just keeping the area clean so that they don't have anything to come search up. But if it's a persistent problem, most of the time, the best way to deal with that is to call a professional exterminator, because they have access to products that you as a homeowner just don't have access to. So much of that is regulated.
I don't feel bad then for taking that course of action. Sandy, did you have a question?
You were cited at one time. I want to know how, as a blind person, did you gain the confidence to do all of these things that you do? What made you decide that you could still do these things once you lost your sight?
Confidence comes from being around other people that are now doing these types of things and talking to them. And a lot of it is people that I have met through my association with the NFB, going to national conventions and finding, just meeting people from other places around the country. And just in conversation, you find people that are doing all these things. And, that's when you sit down and talk with yourself about, why am I not doing this? I used to do this, or I want to do this. And for whatever reason, I may have convinced myself that I can't do it because I can't see anymore. And you see all these people that are actually doing these things. And for me, that's what gives me the confidence or the encouragement to try things if I'm not comfortable or sure about how I'm going to do it. I want to give it a try now because I know other people have done it. And if they can do it, I feel like I can too. So once again, I know that's somewhat of a company line here with this conversation being an NFB conference call, but it's very true. Having colleagues that you can refer to and call on, it can be from your local chapter. If you meet monthly with your local chapter members and just conversation you have there about, things you're doing around your house, or you have this problem. Does anybody else there have the same problem, and how do they tackle it? So just, by association, but so many people, once again, I've said this several times during today's call, we tend to tell ourselves because we can't see, we can't do. And that's just so, so inaccurate, because many things that, if you have a desire to do it, there is a way to do it, whether it requires sight or not. Even if it's a task that typically people would think it requires sight to do, if you really want to do it, there's a way to figure out how to do it.
If you happen to participate in a local chapter, if you begin these discussions with your friends, you may find somebody in that chapter who is willing to come over to your house and help you with that project so that you will begin to learn little techniques of how to get these things done.
Absolutely. And one of the things that I do now, there are some projects that I've tackled here that I've actually hired contractors to do certain things, but I only hire the ones that will allow me to work with them, because I want to be hands-on as well and actually be doing the work as well. I just may not want to do the entire project myself. I need somebody else to pitch in and do some of the work with me, but I don't want to hire somebody necessarily to come and just do the project. And I walk out later and go, wow, how'd you do that? So, a lot of contractors you can talk to are handymen that you may find that are willing to have you come and work with them. So that's another thing I would encourage people to do, is just ask, hey, can I help with doing this? I want to hire you to do this job, but I want to help you do it.
We've been talking about work today. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about having fun. We're going to have some folks here from 64 Ounce Games, and they're going to tell us so many different ways to engage in entertainment, even though you can't see. And Mark, I want to thank you. You did a great job. I want to thank everybody for the participation. And with that, we're going to say good afternoon, and we'll see you tomorrow afternoon. Bye-bye.